This is the Daily Perspective Podcast for Thursday, February 25th, 2021. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this daily dose of observation, insight, and yes, a bit of absurdity. For a Thursday, good to have you along today. Thank you so much for being there. I really do appreciate you being there every day. I look at the numbers, I see them go up and down. They're mainly trending upward, and that's a good thing. And they're trending upward because you're there and you're sharing. Yes, I know they're that's a guilt trip, because you're not sharing, are you? Share it with your friends. Let them know what's part of every day. It is going to be kind of a busy day in my neighborhood. I have errands to run, and I'll be out and about running away from the studio. Not running away, but running away from the studio. And a part of that will be funeral services for the parent of a dear friend. And it's a sad thing. And this family has lost two elderly parents within the last few months. And it is it's taking a toll on some of the people in the family. And so you've heard me refer to my buddy Mike that I have breakfast with on Saturday mornings. We go thrift store scavenging and we hang and we just have a little time of fellowship and enjoy laughter and some food and just looking around at junk. And it's just something that guys need to do. And this guy is feeling for that guy today because his dad passed away. So if you remember, if you pray for folks, please pray for Mike and his family because they need your support right now. And that's today. Things kind of come to a head today and it becomes final. It becomes real. And that's the sad thing. When you go to a funeral, for a lot of people, this part, this transition in life from here to the other side doesn't become real until they're actually there at the funeral home and sometimes at the graveside. And that's, it's hard. It's very hard. I remember when my stepdad passed away and my mom asked me to officiate. And I, of course, said, sure, I will be glad to do that. And when it got closer, when it actually got down to it, I realized, oh, I can't do this. I'm far too close to this. And today I think I might be able to, but back then, no. Because when it becomes real, the pain is real, the loss is real, that ache in your chest that tells you that person who has always been there for your entire life is now gone. It all becomes very real, and if you've been occupying yourself, as a lot of people do at this point when this happens, a lot of people stay very, very busy. They're arranging things. They're managing the phone calls from friends and family. They're making sure the flowers are right. The funeral arrangements are right. Everything is done properly. They're the busybodies. They're staying busy. And then the day comes and everything that they've been arranging is finished and everything becomes real to them. They can no longer avoid it by staying busy. And those people have a tough time on that day, towards the end of that day. When my wife's sister passed away, or when she was murdered many years ago, I remember sitting down with my wife Jane, sweetest woman in the world, who was having an emotional time. And everybody around her was having an emotional time. Understandably so. It wasn't that she was sick and passed away. It was that somebody killed her. And that was an even more horrible thing to go through. If I haven't told the story here, someday I will, but not today. And I sat down with her at one point and I said, baby, everybody in your family is an emotional wreck. They're all wallowing in sorrow. And I used the word intentionally because they were. It's okay to mourn. Being mournful is part of life. And if you are a believer, it is going to be part of your life, or you don't fit the character description of one who really believes. I said, everybody is wallowing in sorrow right now. Somebody has to be strong. Somebody has to be the backbone. Somebody has to be the one who keeps it together for the sake of everybody else. There will be time after this is all over for the emotional breakdown. Once everything is done, everything is final, that day is finished, you've shaken hands and hugged with everybody and thanked everybody for their sympathy and their support, and everybody goes their separate ways, then that's when you can finally have a good cry. But not now, because somebody has to be strong. And it's because so many people just get lost in it. And I've been watching family members in this particular case on social media who still haven't gotten over a few months back when another grandparent passed away. And it's a hard thing for some people and a much harder thing for some other people. And I know my buddy Mike, he's being the strong guy. He was his dad. But he has some confidence in the situation. He knows his dad, and he knows where his dad's heart and his mind were, and he knows his dad's eternity, and he can rest in that. And he told me last Saturday at breakfast, he said, my dad and I always got along. He never raised his voice. He never got mad. He was always a good dad. And he was talking as one who has been spending time with somebody who's mentally really not there 98% of the time. From time to time, very clear, has a good conversation, and then drifts away again. And it was just a matter of time before that indication of his mental state, his mental state was an indicator of what was happening physically as well. And it wasn't going to be too long before his body finally gave up. And he was aware of that. He was aware of decisions he had made in his life. He knew he was ready. So I know that Mike's going to be the strong guy in this whole situation. And there are going to be a lot of other people blubbering and falling apart and asking questions, why? But Mike's going to have that confidence. So, as I said before, please remember to pray for my buddy Mike and his family. It's going to be a tough day for them today. Otherwise, I mean, I've got it easy. I'm watching my dad getting older and his memory going and his hearing going and the like, and biting my lip knowing that we are living on borrowed time now. And I'm watching my mom getting older. And I know it's just a matter of time. And that time is coming sooner than it is later. But it's something that happens to everybody. As my friend Scott likes to say, your chance of getting out of this alive are zero. Your chances of kicking the bucket are 100%. It's going to happen. And you'd better cope with that now rather than later. You'd better come to grips with that reality and deal with it now rather than later. So I encourage you at the beginning of this podcast today, with this sort of mortality in mind, make sure you know what the next step holds for you. Make sure you know. If you'd like to chat about that, feel free to give me a note to Mark at dailyperspectivepodcast.com. I'd be glad to chat with you about it. You can find me, you can touch base on the Facebook page, the Daily Perspective Podcast Facebook page. I'll be glad to chat with you about it. But for today, not so much. There are other things to talk about today that are on the agenda, and that's what we're going to deal with today. But it's very important to me that you know beyond a shadow of a doubt what happens after your last breath. I've been telling you for a while, for quite some time, that I don't think that our president is actually running the show. He's not the guy running the shop. He's not the guy calling the shots. He's not the guy making the decisions. He's not the guy writing those executive orders. It's not him. He's the guy they picked to stand in front of cameras. He's the guy they picked to sit in the Oval Office. He's the guy they picked because he desperately wanted to be president and his wife desperately wanted to be First Lady of the United States of America. They wanted that power. They wanted that glory. They wanted that on their resumes. They wanted to go down in history as having been the people in the White House and in the Oval Office when history looks back at them. And they were willing to sell their souls to get where they are today. And they have. And I'm not the only person who has seen this. I haven't been telling you what other people have said. I've just been making my own observations about this, but I'm not the only person. Senator Lindsey Graham was on Newsmax TV. He said that President Joe Biden was a moderate senator, but the administration implementing all these progressive policies in the first weeks of in office shows it's not Joe Biden who's actually in charge. He says, I like Joe Biden, but the agenda is AOC, Pelosi, Leader Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders. So he said on Greg Kelly Reports, he said, so no, I don't think Joe Biden's in charge. He told Greg Kelly, progressive policies on immigration, unwinding former President Donald Trump's Remain in Mexico policy for those seeking asylum, ceasing the border wall and the Keystone XL pipeline, and a $1.9 trillion liberal wish list that has nothing to do with COVID aren't something a moderate Senator Biden would have supported. He went on to say, and I think we're going to win in 2022 because what they're doing on the border and by changing the Remain in Mexico policy, you're going to create a wave of illegal immigration like you had before Trump came in. I'll make a prediction. Immigration will be the biggest issue in 2022, just like it was in 2016. If we can get our act together, we're going to take over the House and the Senate. And getting the act together starts with the Senate GOP leader, Mitch McConnell, the Republican from Kentucky, getting back on board, accepting Trump's help to win 2022 races in the House and the Senate. Graham said, everything I worried about is coming true, but we can stop it if we can get the House and the Senate back in 2022. And we need President Trump to help us. Without him, we cannot get there. That's going to be very dicey because Mitch McConnell has been public about his personal opinion that Donald Trump does not represent the Republican Party or its interests. Getting Mitch McConnell back on board is going to be tough. It's going to be hard. And when he is back on board, is he really back on board? Is he? Or is he just being the seasoned lifelong politician putting his finger in the air to see which way the wind blows at this point in time? I think that's what's going on. Now, Graham says that immigration will be the biggest issue in 2022. If the Democrats succeed in what they are planning to do, there are 11 million more Democrat voters standing in the wings on the verge of being legalized, who have been in this country, actually more than that, there's probably twice or three times that many, which is the entire reason the Democrats want illegal immigrants allowed into the country, because they know they will be Democrat voters. And because they will be Democrat voters, they will fight tooth and nail to keep them here and to legalize them, so that they will never, ever lose another election. It isn't about compassion. It's about power. Welcome back. It's the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along today. Back on Facebook Live today, bouncing all over the place on social media for video. Just trying to get a sense of things. I'm not at a point, I'm not subscribing to any services where I can send the video feed to multiple places. Just not doing that. Yes, I know StreamFarm is out there. I know I can do that. I've alluded to this side project I've got working up. I've got money in that right now. I can't put it anywhere else. So just give me some time. It is a Thursday. It's the 25th day of February, 2021. I'm scanning social media during the break. There's a story over at IJR.com. Hot mic catches Chicago mayor's profane remark during Black History Month commemoration. She'd been up. She'd had something to say. They didn't turn her mic off. She's sitting behind whoever is speaking at the moment. And she says, "You've got to be effing kidding me." Only she didn't say effing. And the explanation was, well, no, that's not what she was talking about. You know, No, she wasn't referring to the speaker or what she was having to say. One of her staff told her about something that had just developed, and that was her reaction to what she had just been told by her staff. Okay, fine. And what strikes me about this particular story is not that it is of any substance or it really matters. I mean, who's surprised? Okay, who is surprised? What strikes me about this story is that IJR is looking for content, and they are publishing a story about this whack job and what she might have to say in an embarrassing situation. And as a side note, I'd like to know what happened to this woman. I mean, have you seen pictures of her younger when she actually was pretty? And now she looks like something out of a Tim Burton film. I mean, seriously. But why are we shocked? Why? And why would you give this any daylight? Are you trying to show people the true character of these people? Okay, I get that. But it shouldn't be a breaking story or something. Look what they've done. I mean, honestly, it's so. So? Who's surprised? Not this little gray duck. I mean, it makes me think about, and this is not what I was going to talk about this segment, but let me just get this out of the way, and then we'll move on to the stimulus bill. The last couple of weeks, I've been watching a lot of comedy, and I mean stand-up comics, people who make a living making people laugh. And the last couple of days, I've been watching Jim Gaffigan, you know, the Hot Pockets, that guy. So, and that was, the Hot Pockets was a long time ago. And a video I was watching yesterday with my wife, Jane, he was talking about McDonald's, people eating McDonald's, and people, you know, I can't believe you ate McDonald's. This feigned disgust, and how dare you, how could you, there's no nutritional value, blah, blah, blah. And he said, when you think about it, these same people want to know what's happening with the Royals. They want to know what's happening with Prince Harry. They want to know what's happening with the Hollywood stars, the celebrities, and all this other stuff. And he says, you know, when you think about it, that's McDonald's too. There's no nutritional value. It has no worth. But you're constantly, it's like you're hunched over a pile of McDonald's French fries, and you can't stop eating. And you're so obsessed with all of this stuff. It's McDonald's too. Don't point fingers at me for eating McDonald's French fries and enjoying a Big Mac now and then, or the Filet-O-Fish. Oh my. And then post about what the latest thing is from your favorite singer or band or movie star or TV star. Please. You're just as guilty of consuming trash as the person you're condemning for eating a McDonald's. You're just putting trash in your brain. And he's right. He's absolutely right. And I thought, wow, what a great way to make a point. He's got everybody laughing because they're all going, yep, that's true. And he's making a very serious point while people are laughing about it. And the same thing applies to people in politics. Even our corner of the news media, the conservative corner of the news media, plays the sensationalism game. Can you believe what she said on a hot mic? This woman is a cartoon character. She is a Bond villain. She is everything that we should come to expect from leftism. Why is anyone going to be shocked that she dropped an F-bomb on an open mic? Why? That's all I have to say about that. Now, moving on to something that might produce some F-bombs from some people. $1.9 trillion of your tax money in the stimulus bill. The Republican Study Committee, the RSC, the largest conservative caucus on Capitol Hill, has released a fact sheet exposing what Democrats are hoping the public won't find out about in President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus bill. Yes, I said trillion. Yes. Representative Jim Banks, Republican of Indiana, RSC's newly elected chairman, said in a memo sent to caucus members that Democrats have included items of special interest pork and other liberal goodies in the proposal. Democrats on February 19th unveiled the full text of the 591-page bill. By the way, the PDF of the bill is in this. Go to linkreport.us for this story and the link to the entire bill so you can see it for yourself. It's titled The American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. Banks said in an interview with Fox News, keep in mind only 1% of this $1.9 trillion will go towards vaccines. Only 5% overall of this entire package is geared towards public health efforts directly related to the pandemic. Banks said Biden's bill is a bailout of full of kickbacks to Democrats' special interest groups that gave them power, such as a $10 million payment to every labor union, bailouts to Planned Parenthood, and stimulus grants to illegal immigrant families. People who aren't supposed to be in this country are going to get your tax dollars as a gift from this administration. He said, if that's not bad enough, Nancy Pelosi plugged in a $200 million earmark for an underground tunnel in San Francisco for Silicon Valley employees. This is a bailout to the special interest groups that gave them power. That PDF I referred to, the fact sheet, points out that the $50 million for EPA environmental justice grants is a thinly veiled kickback to leftist environmental groups. Under the category of the left's social justice agenda, billions of dollars are given in loan forgiveness and subsidies to farmers and ranchers on the basis of race and ethnicity. Remember, I mentioned this the other day. Socially disadvantaged. Remember that? Socially disadvantaged farmers, race, and ethnicity. The RSC also identified $600 million for additional paid leave for federal employees and postal workers. Did you know about that? I posted about that earlier this morning on social media. You were promised $2,000 if Joe Biden was elected, remember? We're going to get that $2,000 check out to you first thing, first day, guaranteed. Well, that didn't happen. And then instead of it being $2,000, it came down to $1,400. And they said, oh, well, you already got $600 of it. No, that $2,000 was promised beyond the $600. Beyond it. But now it's $1,400. Did you know that federal employees under this bill, in this bill, they'll get $1,400 a week? It's for a limited amount of time, but still, they're going to get $1,400 every week, not just one time. Think about that. The panel also claims Biden's bill is keeping schools closed. It pointed out that the bill provides $130 billion on top of the $110 billion already given to schools, even if they remain closed. Plus, the bill gives labor unions, including those teachers' unions fighting against school reopening, access to the Paycheck Protection Program funding worth up to $10 million per union. Think about that. Schools which are closed, which aren't spending really the money that they would be with kids there, are getting extra funding. Yeah, I realize they're still paying salaries because their teachers are doing online classes. But still. And there's more. And we'll get into that more coming up after this break as the Daily Perspective podcast continues on this Thursday, the 25th day of February, 2021. It's the Daily Perspective podcast. About halfway through this Thursday edition. The podcast that asks the burning question, how did a generation raised on South Park and Family Guy become so offended by everything? Things that make you go, All right, let's get back to that article I was talking about, looking into the $1.9 trillion stimulus bill. By the way, this is coming from the EpochTimes.com. If you haven't started watching the EpochTimes.com, signed up for their email updates and the like, you should. You should subscribe. It's cheap. It's really inexpensive. And it is one of very few reputable websites available today which are giving you the straight story. TheEpochTimes.com. Go to linkreport.us and you'll find the links that go to, actually, I think most of the stories today are coming from there. All right, back to that story. The RSC went on to assert that a provision in this plan that would boost the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour is a job killer. By the way, every reputable, trustworthy economist has looked at this $15 an hour thing and said, it's going to destroy jobs. And if you don't think so, I encourage you to do a quick search and look up stories about Walmart. Yes, your friendly neighborhood Walmart. Walmart opening cashierless stores where the entire register line is nothing but self-serve exit points. You know, you've got that place now. They've been trying it, looking at it for a while, and they've decided, hey, this works. We can reduce our employee numbers. We can stop paying these people to stand up front and scan groceries and the like and let the customers do that themselves and just have people who kind of watch over and help if somebody gets stuck.
I can't figure out how to drag this across this little window thing and make it beep.
And then, you know, some of them will end up, you know, back into other jobs, but you've already got people in the store doing all of those other jobs, plus the cashiers. So what happens to them? Ding, ding, ding. They are now unemployed. That's what $15 an hour will do to you. And trust me, if you've been to a fast food establishment, any place but Chick-fil-A, I would say, because Chick-fil-A nails it every time, and they're nice to you when they do it. If you've been to fast food any time in the last few years, you know that paying them $15 an hour, you might as well just say, here's money, go home, because they're not there. They're not there for the job. They don't care. 1.4 million jobs will be lost. Younger Americans who have less formal education will be hit the hardest. The RSC also said providing a weekly $400 bonus for up to nearly a year and a half would effectively give 53% of Americans a raise for being unemployed. It won't encourage people to go back to work. Actually, it'll do the exact opposite. If you work with, what's the best way I can put this? If you work with the public today, or in a job where you're working with people who are under the age of, I would say 40. Mid-40s? Yeah, mid-40s. Under the age of 45, you probably understand that giving people an extra $400 a week for their unemployment doesn't give them any other incentive than not coming to work. Because you've noticed how it's hard to get people under the age of 45 to accept responsibility for their job. They don't show up when they're supposed to. They're late most half the time. Sometimes they don't show up at all. They don't call or text and let you know what's going on. And when they are at work, they're not doing what they're supposed to do. Or they're redesigning the schedule, making deals with each other, who's going to work when and who's going to work where, and not consulting with management about it. So you come into work expecting so-and-so to be on the job somewhere, and they're not there, and someone who knows nothing about what you need is working in their place. This is happening more and more and more frequently in the business world, especially in the business world where those jobs are not exactly high-end jobs. It's just a job, and there's no sense of responsibility. It's pretty sad. Meanwhile, promised $1,400 stimulus checks would go to some couples with up to $200,000 in annual income. Budget-busting spending is another reason why the caucus is critical of the legislation. The RSC said more than a trillion from previous stimulus packages still remains unspent. While Democrats are pushing Biden's $1.9 trillion budget buster, there's still more than $1 trillion laying out there which has not been spent on anything, and they want almost $2 trillion more. It also pointed out that in Biden's bill, $350 billion would be spent as a bailout for state and local governments. $30 billion will go to transit giants, $8 billion to largely urban airports, $150 billion to the Coronavirus Relief Fund for state and local governments to cover pandemic-related expenses, among others. The bill's also soft on China, so says the RSC. For example, it allows funding to go to colleges and universities that have partnerships with Confucius Institutes, a propaganda tool embedded in the U.S. academic institutions, and allows funding to colleges that have partnerships with companies owned or controlled by communist China. The House Budget Committee voted February 22nd to advance the American Rescue Plan to a full House vote, expected later in this week. House Republican leadership has recommended a no vote for the $1.9 trillion relief bill. House Republican Whip Steve Scalise said in an email to his caucus on the 19th, quote, Republicans insist that we must safely reopen schools, reopen the economy, speed up vaccine distribution, and effectively spend the remaining $1 trillion from previous COVID packages. However, Democrats rejected hundreds of Republican amendments and any efforts to advance bipartisan solutions that are targeted, temporary, and tied to COVID relief. Biden says the legislation needs to pass. Because of course he did. That's what he's been told to say. He said, we need Congress to pass my American Rescue Plan. It deals with the immediate crisis facing our small businesses. Now critics say the plan is too big. Let me ask them a rhetorical question. What would you have me cut? What would you leave out? In fact, an analysis by Wall Street's firm Moody's estimates if we pass my American Rescue Plan, the economy will create 7 million jobs this year. He has indicated that it's going to pass even without Republican support. They have the votes. They can make it happen. He keeps referring to it as his plan. We need Congress to pass my American Rescue Plan. I guarantee you he has very little concept of what's actually in the plan. He has talking points issued. He has scripts issued. He is coached. He does not know. He is where he is because he desperately wanted to be president, not because he's qualified. And those who are running the show behind the scenes knew that. They also know every bit of dirt on the man and his family. And that's one reason they've hated Donald Trump so much. That's one reason they keep trotting out the stories about his taxes. That's one reason that the liberal publications jump all over any story about dissatisfied employees, of Trump's businesses. They're looking for any dirt on Donald Trump they can find to use against him. And they're not finding any. But they keep talking about that possibility, that salacious possibility that there could be some dirt, because they've got to have something to damage him. But there's nothing there. Well, I would suggest to you that there's plenty. There's plenty of that there. There's plenty of dirt on Joe Biden. There's plenty of dirt on his family, Hunter Biden. There's plenty of dirt on their business dealings. There's plenty of dirt. You'll never see or hear any of it because of his faithfulness to them and his obedience, they will keep it all hidden. But if he actually grew a spine, grew a backbone, and stood up to them, stood against them, you would start hearing things. Governor Cuomo in New York is experiencing that right now. He's become inconvenient for the left. And so now, there are Me Too stories beginning to come out. This is how they operate. We have dirt on you. We can put you in power. We can put you in power. You'll have everything you've ever wanted your entire political life. But if you cross us, this is what we'll release to the press. And that's what's going on with Joe Biden. Hunter is so dirty. And Uncle Joe has been his enabler for all these years. And if we all knew all of the dirt on Joe Biden and his family, all of the criminal activity that they've been involved with over the years, I think it might shock even the hardest of us, the toughest of us. We might be absolutely flabbergasted by what we learn. And considering some of the stuff that's come out about Hunter Biden, even just recently, that's saying a lot. But this is how the left plays. Joe Biden's a puppet. He doesn't know what's in this plan. He just knows what he's been told to say about the plan. And the people who are actually looking at the plan are saying, whoa, there's like 6% of this entire thing, $1.9 trillion, 6% of it is set aside to actually deal with COVID-related issues. The rest of it is just paying all these people off who helped get Joe elected. There's still $1 trillion laying on the table which hasn't been spent, which they got before, and they want twice that much more. They're digging the nation's debt hole deeper. They're paying off their cohorts in crime. And they've got a puppet in the White House who's helping them do everything they want. And a compliant and complicit news media to help them along the way. More when the Daily Perspective continues in just a couple of minutes. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. I'm going to skip a couple of things I had in my list today because I want to deal with something. It's a story I've had in my stack for, well, really all week long. And I think it's important to know what's in this story to help make sense of everything else that's happening. And no, I'm not going back to the fundamental transformation of the United States of America, although I am. And what that transformation is and what it is becoming is extremely important. It's important for us to know exactly what these people plan to transform our nation into. And why Donald Trump, at his last State of the Union address, said the United States will never be a socialist nation. And every Democrat sat silent. and every Republican applauded. The Democrats want this to be a socialist nation. The Democrats don't see what was wrong with communism. So let's talk about communism. First off, let's talk about democratic socialism, okay? And let's take an honest look at what it means. Now, this is something I've had in my button bar, in my bank here, my sound bank for a while, and I don't have a note on who this is speaking. But it is a summation of democratic socialism, which has been pushed by AOC, Bernie Sanders, and the like for quite some time. So let's have a listen to this so that you can hear what it's really all about.
Under the banner and guise of democratic socialism, which is a term that Joseph Stalin used, which is a term that Lenin used, which is a term that Hugo Chavez used, which is a term that Fidel Castro used, which is a term that Pol Pot used, which is a term that Mao used, 100 million people died in the last 100 years. 100 million people died under democratic socialism. What Bernie Sanders wants to bring to this country. He wants to bring an ideology that killed people and is killing people to this day. We have a regional director, Joanna Rodriguez. Her family's from Venezuela. She does amazing work. Families from Venezuela, they're eating dogs in the streets. The average Venezuelan has lost 36 pounds in the last year. They're dying of starvation. But you know what? Their leader, Maduro, he's gaining weight. He has champagne at nights, and he eats caviar on the balcony window. While the people thought that they voted for and supported a democratic socialist government. So what really happens in socialism, is to put simply, is the poor will never get richer, but people who have anything will get equally poor. So you're equal. We all love, they love equality. The left loves equality, right? Well, you'll all be equally poor, and the very, very, about a couple thousand people will be so magnificently rich, and they'll have everything and control the entire country. The biggest failure in human history in the last 100 years has been our inability to recognize the failure of socialism. And the fact that it's here now on our shores horrifies me.
The record of democratic socialism isn't good. Democratic socialism is a lie. I think that's something we should all know by now. The only thing democratic about it is the fact that you voted in. As I've said many times before, you can vote it in, but to get rid of it takes guns, which is one of the first things they'll take away from you. Now, I've talked before about Dennis Prager here, and Dennis Prager is a brilliant man. He's got his own radio show, and he is a thinker. And as such, he has a lot to share with us about life in general. And on specific topics, his take is always really fascinating to me. And at PragerU, he and his group put out a lot of great video with a lot of great content about a lot of different topics. And he put one out, a commentary about communism. And I have the text here. I want to read it to you. One of the most highly regarded books of the 20th century was Ernest Becker's The Denial of Death. Winner of the 1974 Pulitzer Prize, the book is regarded as a classic for its analysis of how human beings deny their mortality. But there's something people deny more than mortality. Evil. Someone should write a book on the denial of evil. That would be much more important, because while we cannot prevent death, we can prevent evil. The most glaring example of the denial of evil is communism, an ideology that within a period of only 60 years created modern totalitarianism and deprived of human rights, tortured, starved, and killed more people than any other ideology in history. Why people ignore or even deny communist evil is the subject of a previous column, as well as a Prager University video called Why Isn't Communism as Hated as Nazism? I will therefore not address that question here. I will simply lay out the facts. But before I do, I need to address another question. Why is it important that everyone know what communism did? Here are three reasons. First, we have a moral obligation to the victims not to forget them. Just as Americans have a moral obligation to remember the victims of American slavery, we have the same obligation to the billion victims of communism, especially the 100 million who were murdered. Second, the best way to prevent evil from recurring is to confront it in all its horror. The fact that many people today, especially young people, believe communism is a viable, even morally superior, option for modern societies proves they know nothing about communism's moral record. Therefore, they do not properly fear communism, which means this evil could happen again. And why could it happen again? Well, that brings us to reason number three. The leaders of communist regimes and the vast number of people who helped those leaders torture, enslave, and murder, plus the many more people who reported on their neighbors for saying something objectionable to the communists, were nearly all normal people. Of course, some were psychopaths, but most were not. Which proves that any society, including free ones, can devolve into communism or some analogous evil. Now some facts. According to the authoritative The Black Book of Communism, written by six French scholars and published in the United States by Harvard University Press, the numbers of people murdered, not the numbers of people killed in combat, ordinary civilians trying to live their lives, killed by communist regimes were, in Latin America, 150,000. Vietnam, 1 million. Eastern Europe, 1 million. Ethiopia, 1.5 million. North Korea, 2 million. Cambodia, 20 million. The Soviet Union, 20 million. And many scholars believe that number is considerably higher. And China, 65 million. These numbers are quite conservative. For example, in Ukraine alone, the Soviet regime and its Ukrainian Communist Party helpers starved 5 to 6 million to death within a two-year period. It is almost inconceivable that only 14 to 15 million other Soviet citizens were murdered. And of course, these numbers do not describe the suffering endured by hundreds of millions of people who were not murdered. The systematic stripping people of their right to speak freely, to worship, to start a business, or even travel without party permission. No non-communist judiciary or media. The near poverty level of all communist countries. The imprisonment and torture of vast numbers of people. And, of course, the trauma suffered by the hundreds of millions of friends and relatives of the murdered and imprisoned. These numbers don't tell you about the many starving Ukrainians who ate the flesh of people, often children, sometimes including their own. Or the Romanian Christians whose communist prison guards forced them to eat feces to compel them to renounce their faith. Or the frozen millions in the vast Soviet Siberian prison camp system known as the Gulag Archipelago. Or the Vietnamese communists' routine practice of burying peasants alive to terrorize people into supporting the communists. Or Mao Zedong's regular use of torture to punish opponents and intimidate peasants, like leading men through the streets with rusty wires through their testicles and burning the vaginas of wives of opponents with flaming wicks. Mao's techniques to terrorize peasants into supporting the Chinese Communist Party in its early days. People associate evil with darkness. But that's not accurate. It's easy to look into the dark. It's very hard to stare into the bright light. One should therefore associate evil with extreme brightness, given that people rarely look at real evil. And those who do not confront real evil often make up evils, such as systemic racism, toxic masculinity, and heteronormativity in 21st century America, that are much easier to confront. The Book of Psalms states, those of you who love God, you are to hate evil. In other words, you can't love God if you don't hate evil. And if you don't believe in God, here's another way of putting it. Those of you who love people, you are to hate evil. If you don't hate communism, you don't care about, much less love, people. You may be thinking, well, socialism and communism are different things. You can't equate the two. Yes, I can. Because socialism always becomes communism. Almost always. I suggest you get the show notes today, dig a little further. There are references in this story you need to look up. And that's it for today. God bless you. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.